It's time now for the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank you very much for joining us today. Always glad to have you here with us. Just a couple of notes that it's a shame that we have to say this, but occasionally we need to throw out some rules. There is no talking over each another person. There is no name calling, but we certainly appreciate your calls and your thoughts, and they're all welcome here. Spirited conversation is always interesting and exciting. In the meantime, though, I want to remind you that clean language is always required here, and our rules here are a little bit stiffer than what the FCC says. So it's our discretion. In the meantime, though, I think everybody's going to be on their best behavior today, because in studio today, well, let's start with the city manager, Aaron Kubik. Aaron, everybody's going to be on their best behavior today. Is that right?
I think they are, yes.
You think they are?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, it's probably because we've got some, you know, wonderful personnel here today, and some
armed.
Of my colleagues, and he's armed. Yes. Chief Hintzman is with us today, and Chief Sanchez will hopefully be able to be here a little bit, but he got held up, job duties. So,
we'll send him our best and say, yeah, put that fire out and get here quickly.
That's right.
All right. Anything from you before we...
One of the things I wanted to do with today's show is council provided direction to us at the last council meeting to go ahead and hire 12 additional FTE. And that's probably the largest big injection of FTE that we've had in a long time. And I thought it would be nice for your listeners to get a general idea of what does that mean for our services when it comes to public safety in our community. And so wanted to have both chiefs here today to talk to you and your listeners about that.
All right. Well, let's get right to it. Chief Hintzman, always glad to have you here. You're always welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Thank you for coming in today. You get 6 new officers. How does that make you feel?
First of all, thank you so much for having me. And I just wanted to kind of piggyback on what the city manager said regarding the injection of the new bodies. I'm incredibly appreciative of council, but more importantly, the support of our local community. I've been here for a little over 6 years now, and the support continues to be strong, and that relationship continues to grow, which I'm very appreciative of, as I said. But how does it make me feel? Absolutely fantastic. We've gone through some ups and downs over the years. We've lost some police officers. We've got one back. We've lost some additional staff. We've got some back. This will make us whole again and then some. I'm pretty confident over the years that I've been here, my number, my sweet spot has always been 62 cops. So this injection for PD at 6 FTE will be 5 additional police officers and 1 additional community service officer. Because as you know, with more police officers out there, we're going to increase the need for that CSO support. So we currently have 4 community service officers, and this will bring us on to a 5th community service officer. We currently have allotted 57 police officers, and this will bring us up to 62. Amazing numbers. They've never been that high before.
All right. Well, congratulations. First of all, let me say one thing before we get into anything else, and that any contact I've had with your department, and I've had several, incidentally.
We can talk about your tickets later.
Extreme professionalism.
Thank you.
I think that starts at the top. So congratulations. You've certainly led the way here, and pass that along to all of your charges out there. We appreciate them. Thank you very much. Now, what is this 5 additional officers and 1 public service officer? What's that mean to the people out there? What are we going to be able to see? Is there something visual that we'll notice?
You will notice a significant increase in proactive work around the community once we get our new folks hired and trained. With police as opposed to as opposed to the fire department, it takes almost a year to hire and train a police officer because of certification requirements. So it's not going to be overnight, but I can assure you and the community we're already moving forward in that direction. But to answer your question, you will see more police officers out there. You will see more proactive work, and you will see us spending time on crimes that we may not have been able to spend a lot of time on before. For example, We have a detective unit that manages a significant number of person crimes. It will be good to relieve them with some support so they can pay attention to some additional crimes as well. More of an impact on property crimes, burglaries, and things like that. So that's what I expect the community to see. But also, on top of that, as we hire police officers just to meet our minimum staffing requirements, we expect to get our traffic team back out there in full force. I expect to add another detective. I expect to add another community response team officer. And they're the folks that you see that are working out there in the unhoused camps, resting sites, should I say, around town, around the parks. So I expect to see quite the injection in proactivity, productivity, and enforcement throughout our community.
Okay, that proactive is certainly something that's welcome. And you mentioned your traffic team. I drive in this town every day. I see red lights run. I see stop signs basically ignored. And I become a very defensive driver and avoid anything that looks like any traffic congestion. And I'm sure a lot of people out there, is there going to be a focus on any particular area, or what are we going to see? And I realize we could be talking about a year down the road.
I think you'll see the traffic enforcement happening much sooner. Mm-hmm. I think if our community thinks about, let's say, this past week, for example, and their commute to and fro, if it's 6th, 7th Street, Parkway, whatever the case may be, I've asked our folks to pay more attention to proactive work. I've asked our team to do your best when you have the spare time to do traffic enforcement, because I see the same thing. Right in front of the PD, sometimes it's like a racetrack. And we want our officers.
I refer to it as a 7th Street Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's pretty fast sometimes. But also, we are getting out there. We're doing a ton of proactive work. I just looked at our shift notes. So every single day, our supervision will provide shift notes for myself and the rest of the teammates to understand what's been happening. And the proactive work has already begun to increase and to get even better in our community. So I look forward to seeing a bigger drive as we push forward.
Other proactive areas that we haven't mentioned here that we might not be aware of, we'll see some initiatives?
Absolutely. Off the top of my head, Park Street is one of them. Sometimes folks drive pretty quick on Park Street, right in front of Riverside Park. Parkway, example, 6th, 7th. Redwood, sky's the limit. The entire community has a lot of people that have taken advantage of our lack of a traffic team out there. So it's coming, so keep your eyes out.
All right. Outside of the traffic team, are there any other areas to be proactive? Are we talking about homeless? And I'm not talking about the camps specifically, but I hear from the people downtown that they are still dealing with significant situations with I want to use the term vagrant, but I guess homeless is the right term these days.
Yeah, so I think what you're talking about is our central business district and more of that consistent everyday enforcement, whether it be 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 4 o'clock in the morning. I refer back to the shift notes I mentioned just earlier. Our folks were out there hitting all the parks last night, hitting the central business district, enforcing the rules, asking people to move along and or comply, and issuing citations. So it will ebb and flow. As we're able to add another person to our community response team, for example, then you'll see that increase. I'm also working to bolster and increase the numbers of cadets that are with our department. If you may remember, or some of our listeners might remember, a few years ago we started the cadet program. And the idea of the cadet program was it's an entry-level position, a little bit lower than I would imagine a community service officer position, but it's really to have additional eyes and ears in our central business district and in our parks so they can relay information to police officers so we can get out there and enforce the rules.
All right. Tell me about this cadet program a little further here. Explain that to who you're really looking for. Are we talking about young people? Can anyone be a cadet? What are the responsibilities and what's their authority?
The kind of the premise behind it is an entry-level position for community service officer and or police officer, but it's open to anybody. It doesn't matter age. If you would like to be in a part-time position, you can actually apply right now for the cadet position. But essentially, a cadet is similar to a community service officer, and they would handle low-level violations within our central business district and in the parks. Let's use a simple example like littering. They could manage that, and they could also issue a citation. There are some folks in our community that might need more attention, so we would also train a cadet to have solid social and emotional intelligence on scenes, so recognizing that they have additional resources out there like police officers. So they just might notice something, immediately call a police officer who would come out and handle that particular incident.
So there's a particular mindset, and I think that mindset, that particular mindset goes through not only cadets, but your field service officers and your officers. What are you looking for in terms of mindset for a person who might like to apply?
I always look for something that's very similar to good people and tenacity. We can teach you the rest.
Okay, there you have it. And if I'm interested, where do I sign up? Who do I call?
You can call the police department, 541-450-6260, or contact the city offices, and they'll help you, or jump online to our website.
Okay, it's 452-6260?
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right. We don't want to ignore the gentleman who...
It's okay, you can ignore the fire chief.
Chief Sanchez, welcome. Glad to have you here with us today. Did you get the fire out on the way here?
I did.
Okay.
Well, thank you for having me.
That's good news. We were just talking to Chief Hensman about his six new additions. You've got six new additions coming in, too. Tell me what you expect to have from these six people. How soon can we expect to see some difference or some changes?
Well, first, I'd like to thank the City Council and as well as the X-Team, the City Manager, just for this monumental thing that we've been asking since, I believe, 2007. So this is a huge increase in public safety for the community. The great thing that we're expecting, though, we flew, and I say flew as in the job announcement is out. The applicants started yesterday. That has been flown yesterday, so we're excited to announce that to go after the six that we have been given. So with those, with the increase, the object is to get them started on January 5th, to have them live and in person come January 5th is the goal, pending background checks and everything that has to go through with that. But that is the plan. Within that, though, there's about an eight-week academy after that. And then once we go through that, then they're on with our crews going through the rest of their training, which could take about the full year once they get off probation until they're in play. But they will be there, supplementing staff, fully trained, ready to go within 8 weeks after January 5th. Now, what that does for us as a community is right now we have three on at Parkway. We have two on at Hillcrest and two on at Redwood. That's our minimum staffing. What we'll be able to do with this advent of six people is the more often than not, we're going to have three firefighters, firefighter EMTs at a minimum, hopefully with some paramedics applying as well, to supplement our paramedics that we currently have on each engine. So now the calls that require two engines to show up to get those extra hands, because there's only two guys on an engine right now, or two professionals on an engine, we'll be able to send one engine and leave another engine available for a lot of those calls, so thus increasing our capabilities to respond to multiple calls at the same time instead of tying up two engines for an EMS call that could only require one. So that really does increase the overall safety of the community as we move forward with this. And that was one of the great things that the city manager helped push forward and the council did as well. So it's been a huge blessing that we're doing this, and we're looking for those candidates that I like to say smart, humble, and hungry. They're really smart, they're really tenacious, like he said as well, and humble enough to know that we're here serving the community. If we got to clean toilets that day, that's what we're doing. We're doing it just like I still do it. We're all going to do it together to help the community in any way that they need, not just the fire and EMS that we do every day that people know us for.
All right, every job needs to be done, whether it's polishing the truck, cleaning the toilet, or putting out fires.
Yes, sir.
All right. What kind of applicants are you looking for? Give me a description of the bare minimum.
The bare minimum is somebody. So one of the things that we did recently is we're looking for some new recruits coming out of the academy as well as RCC. And we're looking for those individuals that want to grow with us. So we are growing. We're increasing our capacities here. We're increasing our EMS capabilities in the department. We're also working towards being the first class one in the state of Oregon in terms of ISO rating. So people that want to help build and grow the community and our public safety community, as well as our response times and increasing that and just making this the best place, in my opinion, in all of Oregon to live and play.
All right. If you achieve that, mm-hmm. what's that mean to me as a consumer?
So if we achieve the, and I feel that we will, if we achieve the ISO class one.
Let's say when we achieve it.
Yes, when we achieve it. With this advent of personnel. So ISO is a classification that insurance companies use. And with that, insurance being a big topic in this state with that wildfire map that was recently repealed. With that, though, we're a class two currently, which we're very proud of right now. And that's been done to the leadership before I even got here. And that's amazing. But if you go up 1 point, for instance, we're going to go to class one on this is an average. And I made this clear during the council meetings as well. It's about for every private resident for $100,000 assessed, you'll save about $430 in your insurance. For commercial, on average, you go up to a class one, it's about 8.5% on savings on insurance overall. That's a national average that they put together. So it really does help the community save money. So the investment in us also saves money out of your pocket as well.
You have my attention now. All right. How soon can we get to the ISO 1?
Realistically,
yes.
So we have to, once we train, then I have to have a year of solid records before I come into call for review, which I will call for review because we just recently got renewed in May of last year for our ISO class 2. So I will call for review of a year of solid records with our new personnel, our increase in training hours or records, and then our inspection capacities for the overall for the city, which we're increasing as well with this personnel, which is also makes it safer for everyone because we're going in and we're making sure the exits are clear, the sprinkler systems, and you'll see more of a presence. And that's a friendly presence. I don't want anybody to worry about it. It's just a friendly presence that we work with everybody with. I would say about a year and a half, I will call for a review.
So
from the day that some 8 weeks after they start on January 5th.
January 5th. Well, that gets us 8 weeks. That's 2 months, January 5th. That puts us into March and April, and then a year from then?
2027, yes. Sir.
2027. All right. All right, folks, mark that on your calendar. And
you hold can hold me to it.
Hold his feet. I hate to use this term, but hold his feet to the fire. If you're going to hold anyone's feet to the fire, this is the one to do it. He could handle it. All right. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show. We have the police chief and the fire chief and the city manager here. We expect your phone calls after the top of the hour news. So stay tuned, though. We'll be right back after this word. Welcome back, everyone. Glad to have you with us here for the Tuesday Talk Show. We have a full house today. We have the fire chief, the police chief, and also the city manager. So we'll just put him on the end of the line there. Let's go back to Chief Sanchez. How soon will people see an effect here? Because let me back up one step here, because I know that the ideal is to have three men on a fire truck every time it rolls, and we've only had two so far. Am I correct in that?
Yes. So what this will do is, now the way that this is going to work with the advent of these six new FTEs, so what this will do is more often than not, because what we're doing is adding two extra FTEs per shift. So there's three shifts, A, B, and C. So with the combating, with the time off, our crews still need their vacation times and stuff. They need to go be with their families. More often than not, we will have three guys on our truck. Now, the minimum staffing is not changing with this advent, with these new FTEs. And the reason being is we'll be able to show a significant reduction in overtime because our drivers are averaging over 430 hours of overtime a year if you split it out between them, which essentially is two extra months of work. So instead of working their 12 months calendar year, pretend they're working, it's a 14-month calendar year that they're working just to cover the minimum staffing. So this will relieve the burnout. This will relieve the days that we're just running so short that we're having to force hire people and having to force them to come in just to maintain that. But it will ultimately increase those three on each engine on the Hillcrest and Redwood station. So we can expand our coverage instead of sending two units on a code, for instance. We'll have three hands on the battalion chief, and we won't have to send an extra engine. That engine will still be available for the next call that comes out.
Okay. Any impact on response time?
The response time, yes. Our response times will actually start. You'll see over the year with that more often, since you're not having tied up two engines, they'll still remain in the response district, so your response time will actually improve.
All right. Currently, we've got lots of fires surrounding us here, small ones, thank goodness. Everybody's jumping onto it. How has your department been involved?
So our department recently, when ODF has been really taxed after last week on Wednesday, I believe the lightning moved in and started a lot of these fires. If I'm off by a day or two, forgive me. But the what we did is we had to step up, and the Rogue Valley in general is we added some severity staffing that day because ODF was so stretched thin, chasing around a lot of these lightning starts. So we stepped up and put an entire group together of Type 6 brush trucks. So for an immediate response, we were available. We also sent our group. Our group was involved with Board Shanty, and then recently our Type 3, our OSFM engine that we got from the state that was given to us by via grant, we were deployed for 7 days out there and did a fantastic job on the flat fire. So we're, this city is very involved with keeping not only just our immediate community safe, but also our state safe as well.
All right. Chief Hensman, fire and police have to work together in spite of the competitions between blood donations and diving into cold water and things like that. Do we have a record on who wins most of those? Or
I think it's 50-50, actually. I certainly appreciate all the men and women in both police and fire in the city that donate their time to support great needs.
But to a more serious note, you do work together and are on the same scenes many, many times together. How does that coordination work?
Yeah, it's better than ever before. Although we split it from the public safety model a while ago, the way we work with each other to support other people has not changed. Our police officers, for example, are still trained to size up scenes. And, there's a lot of times we do get there first on critical incidents like a fire, and we still have folks that are able to size it up. So then when the fire chief and his crew get there, we can provide some quick updates, and they go to town and do what they've been trained to do.
All right. How extensive is that training to arrive on the scene of a fire, first of all?
It's not a lot, in fairness. It's something that we still work with Jimmy and his folks to keep our folks trained up on. But it has a common sense approach to it, so we can at least provide some of that intelligence to the fire folks so they can get after it.
All right. Now, I know firemen always go out with certainly a trained medic, or at least try to every time. How does that compare with what our police are equipped to do in terms of perhaps a tragic accident?
Yeah, so our folks are very well trained. We don't have the same amount of paramedics or EMTs on our staff, but we still do have folks that are well trained and carry those certifications. But we also look at tactical emergency medical scenes and scenarios, and we train for that quite often. We can't be so naive to think that a active shooter incident couldn't happen in our community, so we need to be prepared for that. And our folks do train on that, and we do have what we call TEMS training throughout our department, and we provide kits. So we have a lot of the medical supplies that we need to be a little bit better than average.
A little bit better than average. Good. Great. Great. You hate to think of an active shooter situation, but obviously the police have to be prepared for it. What can you tell us about that preparation and the equipment that you used in a situation like that, or the coordination involved?
You know, it starts from day one at the academy, for example. That training happens, and then it continues to happen all year, whether it be through defensive tactics, whether it be through case law training, whether it be through some tactical type of scenario training within the organization. It never stops. I'm pretty confident. I saw an email recently as we prepare for another big training scenario, and we'll continue to do that and work with our partners at D7, any district, in fact, that wants to support us, and businesses. And we just continue to look at what's going on around the world, what's going on in the country, and how can we be prepared for it. We certainly don't want to be on an episode of 2020 because we weren't prepared for X, Y, or Z. So we're always trying to think ahead. We're always trying to look down from a 30,000-foot level. And how can we be ready? And I like to think when you're overly prepared, those things tend not to happen. Unfortunately, we do see a lot of critical incidents here in Grants Pass, and our folks do a really good job managing that. And then our detectives come right in behind our patrol team and work through the investigation all the way through conviction with our DA's office.
There are lots of areas that I want to go into. And I don't think I'm going to get an answer on some of those, though, so we'll leave some of those alone. In terms of do you train with the idea that something could happen in a particular place, at a city hall, for instance, or at a hospital, Do you target some areas specifically for training?
Yeah, of course you're going to target public access points. But essentially, our staff and myself, we're always mentally preparing ourselves for it to happen anywhere. Sometimes we kind of joke about the old school police officer and the norm. When you drive to work, you have to be mentally prepared for what could happen. It's not uncommon for people to, as they're driving to work, for example, play a scenario in their head. Hey, I'm driving past the 7-Eleven right now. What if I saw this? A masked gunman walking into the store. How would I manage it myself? So we're always playing routines and scenarios through our heads, and then we always talk and engage. We always debrief. And we do a lot of we do a lot to prepare ourselves for worst case scenarios.
All right, Chief Sanchez, reply to what the fire department does in relationship to some of those incidents that you might be involved in. Also, I would expect that once again there would be coordination.
So I would like to echo what he said. The police and fire, we work really closely together. We share stations. Their guys are in our stations as well. And it's a wonderful relationship here, that so much so that we got to celebrate a life-saving event the other day by the lay public, but that chain of survival was because of fire, police, and EMS. So everything we do, we're often doing it together. And in terms of the active shooter, we train together as well. So we also have SWAT medics that for fire that work are in line with our SWAT team that we have here at Grants Pass PD. And they train with them, as well as there is the email you spoke about, too. There's some assailant training and active shooter training going on together for police and fire, because there's different formations and different things. We also have it's sad at the same time, but we're prepared that we carry tactical vests as well and tactical gear in case we have to go into those situations. So you will see our fire and EMS personnel showing up in those situations, running in along with beside in the middle of our PD as well. So we are prepared as a community and continue to train on those situations.
So, Chief, they'd run in together with you, huh?
Absolutely. And I'll just kind of
piggyback. Is that a force multiplier?
It is a force multiplier. And, you know, thank goodness for the relationship that we have. And when you talk about preparedness, for example, even with myself, I have all the equipment necessary if something really bad happens. I need to be prepared with the correct type of weapons. For example, I do have an AR-15 out there ready, along with my sidearm, along with tactical emergency and medical kits. So I need to be prepared too. Although I'm in a more of an administrative role and management type leadership role, I still think about, what if I were driving by the 7-Eleven and I see this? I would be affronted, and I would never forgive myself if I wasn't out there ready.
All right. All your officers continue to do that same thing?
They do. They're a fantastic group.
Okay. They echo that. And Chief Sanchez, to yours too, and Aaron, I guess to your people too.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
All right, real quickly, Aaron, quick comment before I break for news?
No, I think we're good to go.
All right, we are good to go. It's time, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned. We'll be back with your phone calls right after this word.
Those are drilling.
Welcome back, Tuesday Talk Show in Progress, ladies and gentlemen. The lines are open here. If you have a question or comment for our guest today, the number is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, you can air your question or comment to our guest today. Our guest today, of course, let's see, Chief Hensman, Grants Pass City Police, Grants Pass Fire and Rescue. Chief Sanchez is with us, and of course, City Manager Aaron Kubik is here. And suddenly, the phone lines are lighting up here. So let's say, good morning. You're on the air. You have a question or comment for our guests?
Yeah, good morning. Regarding the fairly high level of noncompliance with traffic devices that you were talking about moments ago, I wholeheartedly agree with that statistic. Has the city ever considered putting in photo cameras at the major intersections?
All right, Chief, I think that was for you.
I think that question's for me.
Yeah.
Has the conversation
that
come up?
Not only cameras for noncompliance, but also for the fines.
All right. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead, Chief.
To answer the question, yes, we have discussed this topic, and I'm sure we'll continue to discuss this topic as we explore a municipal court, for example. So to answer your question, yes.
Okay. I would think that too soon is not soon enough in that regard. A as Chuck was saying, you have to be an extremely defensive driver in this community anymore. And I look at the major Y intersections for people that will be speeding 65 miles an hour down that 40 mile an hour road, and is completely below the stop sign or the stoplight. It's like it didn't even exist. And I'm talking from semis to any other type of vehicle. I've seen it all. So I think most of the people here need some help in that regard.
Yeah, we looked at this from a city perspective. I think it was 3-4 years ago. The chief and I were involved in talking with the city council. We were trying to identify different intersections, and I'm sure you're probably well aware of some of our higher incident intersections. And the majority of those were ODOT intersections. And so that added an additional layer of complexity with regards to getting permission and the ability to utilize those type of cameras. We have the ability to do so on some of our intersections, but they were more of lower level incident intersections. So it'll, again, yeah, like the chief said, start when we're having discussions about municipal court, and then also coordination with ODOT to take a look at those higher level intersections.
Yeah, I would imagine the full 6th Street and 7th Street thoroughfares, both ways, north, south. Every one of those intersections need that sort of protection as well, just for pedestrian safety. I've seen people dang near run over by cars that don't stop for the pedestrian signs when they have the pedestrian has the right of way when the light's in their favor. And they just continue on like they don't even, like the people don't even exist. And it's something's going to have to change, or somebody, you know, more and more people are going to get injured and killed. And have you talked to the Medford and the Ashland area? I believe those two communities do the photo enforcement for traffic compliance. And have you, anybody talked to those folks regarding the incident rates? Have they gone down? Have they gone up? If not anything, I think it would be a heck of an income for the community, because I think the city would just rake in the money.
Yeah, we're doing our research on that and have reached out to other municipalities. And the majority of the time, those municipalities have contract services. And so there's a certain revenue sharing aspect of it. And as the chief, as Chief Hintzman mentioned, this could play along with us engaging with a municipal court. And we currently do not have a city municipal court, and it's something we're looking at, and this would be another tool that we can utilize for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Yeah. All right. Interesting question here, and that's one thing that we had intended to get to, but a municipal court, what would that do for the city? What will it take to get it done? How much does it cost? What will it do for the city? Chief, you want to deal with that one?
I can start us off, and then I'll probably defer a bit to Aaron on this one too. But essentially, we're looking at how can we support accountability. And a municipal court would manage the low-level offenses, misdemeanor crimes, along with municipal code violations. So we all know that our district attorney's office are overwhelmed, and they're managing an immense, significant load of felony crimes, Measure 11 crimes to boot, and it's a lot on their plate. So then managing lower-level violations and misdemeanors can become difficult, and they do not file on certain charges. Having an admissible court, we would then have a significant amount of control over how those cases are cleared up. Providing additional accountability, but also too, and I don't know the percentage of, let's say, a speeding ticket, for example, but I do know that the percentages change when you have a municipal court, and that the city sees a significant amount of that money versus when you don't have a municipal court. Off the top of my head, I want to say it's something like 65 or 70%. I don't know if that is correct, but it is a larger number.
All right. Aaron, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, the chief is right. When I used to have a municipal court under me, it was a 60% number that we were looking at. And municipal courts are a great tool, like the chief said. Looking at the financials of a municipal court, there's a few ways you can get those operational. It does require some additional staffing on the city's perspective. We're finding that Some of them sort of break even, and some of them come at a cost, and it all depends on what you have with your infrastructure. Do you have red light and speed cameras? Do you have, what kind of enforcement do you have? What are your activity levels? And what do you have set up administratively? So we're looking into all of those things. We anticipate we'll be, after we've done all of our research and met with some cities that have municipal courts, we'll look at probably bringing this up to council maybe towards the end of this calendar year to start the discussion for a municipal court. It would take some time to put a municipal court in place because we would have to get some staffing and get the infrastructure established, but it could be a very useful tool for us in the future.
As a useful tool, what would that do in terms of what we see happening at the jail with low-level crimes? We see people incarcerated at one point, and by midnight that same day, they're re-released due to overcrowding or, once again, the DA's office certainly overworked and short-staffed here locally. Is that municipal court the answer to this situation? And that being said, are we looking at a city jail too?
So we are not looking at a city jail. That is not a cost and a liability I think the city would want to take on. Ultimately, that would be a council policy decision. We do have a local jail that has, I think, some future capacity for this. You mentioned the jail, and I think that's a key piece for success in some communities within municipal court. But with that also comes, we've noticed some cities are paying for additional jail beds to make their municipal court more impactful for the community in those low-level repeating crimes. So that would be an additional cost. I know we used to buy beds back in 2013 when the jail had some financial issues. We were paying $1 million a year for that service. So that's something that we'll be looking at also as a potential, and we'd have to have discussions with the county and the sheriff and look at that. But that is the way some municipal courts are established throughout the state of Oregon.
All right, Chief Hensman, one more thing on the same topic here. How frustrating is it for your officers to be arresting the same people day after day after day?
It's funny you asked that question because I was getting ready to piggyback on something Aaron said and to discuss that. Our officers do become frustrated. Do I become frustrated? Absolutely, 100% I do. But it's my job and it's our job as police officers to cheerlead one another and remind each other that although – take it back. We can only control so much. We will continue to arrest people. When we arrest people and they go to jail, that is no longer our burden, essentially. That then falls on the jail and it falls on the DA's office. And they make decisions because of their policies and procedures, staffing, etc. So we try not to become affected by that or impacted. But we're human. So, of course, we will become frustrated if somebody is released under their own recognizance over and over and over again.
Again, it's that strong mindset you instill in your officers.
Absolutely is a strong mindset. But when I think about a municipal court, I've often thought about how can that impact the city residents, the city itself, financially, possibly. But also, too, what I think it does, and obviously I am not an attorney, nor do I want to sound like one, and do I know the ins and outs of charging matrices and how that work happens within a DA's office. But what I think I know is that when an individual might be arrested for, let's say, trespass, and the decision is made to no file, then it just dies. Versus if it is a municipal court infraction, misdemeanor, and we file on it and we have a conviction, regardless of time in jail, that is still a conviction on the individual's record. And as they build and build, then there will be jail time mandates based upon excessive convictions versus arrests.
All right. Thank you very much. Chief Sanchez, didn't mean to leave you out of this one, but you can respond because I know you work closely with the police department, and occasionally your people will answer a call if you've got someone who's been arrested and down with a physical injury.
Well, again, we work so close together. We respond constantly in sync. Oftentimes, our guys are pulling out of the fire station as the same time as PD is. And when we all go together, If it's in the terms of under police's purview, we work there. They'll take control of the scene. They make the scene safe, and then our guys will go in and help and deal with the situation however it needs to be dealt with on the most highest level of care and professionalism.
Yeah, I've heard people say before, here's a traffic accident. Why is the fire department there? Well, your people are trained medically and carry oxygen.
Yes, so on traffic accidents is a perfect example. PD's there dealing with traffic, helping us keep the scene safe as well as our guys. Also, we're mitigating any hazards. Is there fluids leaking? Is the car possibly going to catch on fire, depending on what's happening? And then also assessing medically, and oftentimes well before AMR gets there. And they're treating those patients, triaging them, and determining which direction we're going to go. Or if we need EMS, because a lot of times on the minor car accidents, we'll have where we just cancel EMS because everybody's claiming no injuries.
All right, Chief Hensman, it looked like you were going to lean in. You wanted to jump in on this again. Go ahead.
I had a thought, and I just wanted to share with you and our listeners and the community that resource allocation plays a huge part in everything we do every single day. I often think, how can we do a better job with traffic enforcement, working through some of the unhoused problems within our parks and shelters, and just everyday nuisance offenses that affect and impact the community? The unfortunate reality is that there's a lot of high-pressing, high-priority calls for service that happen and take a lot of our time throughout the day, and we will continue to work to be better. There's only so much time in the day, and there's only so many officers to do that work, but I can guarantee you we will be working together as a team to provide more proactivity within our community, and that's going to include traffic enforcement and person stops that are committing crimes and or behaving suspiciously throughout our community. Drug enforcement is huge. Hand-to-hand sales continue. Vehicles continue to speed, run red lights, and our folks are going to continue to try to do everything they possibly can to have an impact on this community.
Sounds like great teamwork, and great teamwork comes from great leaders. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Stay right there. We've got more to come, but we're going to take a little break right now, right after this. Stay tuned. Tuesday Talk Show continues. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Still time for a call at 541-472-1270 if you have a specific question for our guest. Our guest, Chief Hensman, Chief Sanchez, and City Manager Aaron Kubik, all in studio today. And while we're off the air, I hear planning going on and what we could do if we had. Talking about some traffic control. In terms of traffic control, if a person has a complaint about a particular street or lots of things going on, Chief, what's the best thing for them to do? And we do have a call standing by. So go ahead, Chief.
Yeah, the best thing for any citizen to do is if you see something, say something, and just call the department and report that. And then we'll look after, we'll take care of it from there.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Let's see. Hello. You're on the air. You have a question for comment for our guest today.
Yes. Thank you. Why a municipal court traffic enforcement when there's a governor executive order in House Bill 4210 that dismisses all violations, traffic violations that aren't misdemeanors or felonies? And secondly, when you have cost overruns and not money to complete this filtration plant on budget, where is this money coming from to pay for these new public employees? Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, sir. All right. That question could go a couple of ways. Aaron, you want to deal with it first, and we'll throw it to the chief?
Sure. I guess I'll deal with the financial aspect of it. The water treatment plant was mentioned and cost overruns. We're not seeing cost overruns with our water treatment plant. We unfortunately did not get a brick grant of $50 million. And so we are looking at needing about a $6 per month increase in residential rates to make up for that. The positive about not getting the brick grant means we don't have to follow some of the federal guidelines that you have to follow with federal dollars, which brings down the cost of the construction of the water treatment plant. We also just recently got news that we received a $10 million low interest 1% loan with a 30% forgiveness. So that's going to also add to the affordability of our water treatment plant. And we have a guaranteed maximum price on our water treatment plant. So we know that the water treatment plant will not be above and beyond what council has already approved. So there's a lot of financial mechanisms when it comes to the water treatment plant that assures that the community will be getting quality treatment plant at the best cost possible. The other thing associated with the water treatment plant, as it was mixed with public safety discussion, is the water treatment plant is an enterprise fund. It is operated and managed to be independent of general fund dollars. It is fully rate paid by the rate payers, by the your utility bill, where police and fire are general fund, and the majority of their revenues come from property taxes. We did receive direction from council to hire 12 new additional FTE, which is one of the reasons why we're here this morning. How we're going to fund that? That is an additional draw on our general fund resources of about $1.8 million all in, with all 12 were hired today. It's going to take some time, as both chiefs mentioned, in order for us to get to that level, like at least a year, if not even more. In that time, we're going to be looking at and taking a look at our reserve funds and our contingencies. We're first going to consider, as we discussed with council, maybe a reduction in our reserve fund policy, which is currently at 25% to 35%, and maybe we need to reduce that to 20% to 30% or something along those lines. Those are things that we're going to be looking at, and JC, our finance director, and myself and the X team will be considering, so we can provide council with the best numbers as we move forward. And we'll be having those discussions January through March before the budget season to determine the true impact of this process. So that gives a little bit on the budget aspect of the caller's questions.
All right. Chief, are you familiar with the legislation that the gentleman was talking about?
I wrote House Bill 4208 down. I don't think that's correct. So if I could get an update on that House bill, I'll do some research. I'm not familiar with that as far as holding people accountable to misdemeanors versus moving violations that are non-criminal. So I'm not familiar, but my comment would be that I think most people, especially with moving violations, the majority of the driving public do pay those fines. Now, if you don't and you choose not to, there can be liens put on you, on your property, for example. You can lose your driving privileges. So there's consequences for people not paying violations. I don't have all of those consequences at the top of my head, but I'm to answer the caller's question, I'm not familiar, and I would love to have a conversation with him if he would like to. Just call my office, 450-6260, and I'd be happy to chat with you further and maybe learn from you as well.
450-6260. Chief Sanchez, you kind of got squeezed out here a little bit here, but tell me, and we've got about 4 minutes left. If I push the envelope here a little bit, what do we need to know about Grants Pass Fire and Rescue right now? Status right now and where it's going.
So Grants Pass Fire and Rescue is doing fantastic. Since I've gotten here and with the support of the X team and the city manager and this council, one of the biggest things, one of the most exciting things is our most recreated river and our Swiftwater Rescue Team has expanded its scope. They've recently done, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, rescued five off the river on a Sunday night as well. And just that, our whole Swiftwater Rescue Team has expanded. Our coverage has expanded. We've been working well with Hellgate recently. We went down and trained with their boat captains. That is a big, big, huge jump for our community to take care of that. City Manager Kubik helped bring that on. That boat was donated by a member of our community. So that's been an increase. We also have a brand new UTV. We are growing and starting a REMS team, which is also going to make us more available to help respond medically on the conflags and the fires and to work well within our community here locally as well as throughout the state. So we're growing in a lot of those areas. Our EMS capability has expanded and is currently expanding. Unfortunately, beforehand, just for one reason or another, we didn't have the same complement of capabilities as, say, AMR has. And now we are growing in that. We are stocking more of the drugs and the required medicines that are needed to take care of our community. And we are pushing forward that. We operate under the same protocols, so we are going to be having the same level of care as you see with AMR. We have the paramedics, but now we also will have the required medicines, the drugs, to take care of those in need.
Yeah, the term, your department is fire and rescue, and sometimes we focus on fire and forget about the rescue portion.
Yes.
Do you work closely with SAR, search and rescue?
So if they call us out, they will. But that is a county, primarily a county thing. If they call us out and need help, for instance, with some of our apparatus and stuff, we are always willing to help.
Or along the Rogue River in particular.
Yes. In particular, we are the main rescue in this area in terms of swiftwater rescue. That would be us. The next one closest to us would be in Rogue River.
Okay. I am out of time. I'm going to take some more time here. Chief, final words from you.
Thank you very much for the community support. We feel it, and you'll see proactive work in your future.
All right, proactive. Good term. All right, Chief Jimmy, tell me.
Thank you so much. We love this community. Our professionals love this community. They're involved in it every day, inside and outside, donating not just from their time here and their work. And I am so thrilled to be here with this staff and this X team. And even our police department, we work so well together. So thank you for the time here today.
Even with the police department?
Yeah, we love them.
Okay.
Nationally, that's a big deal. To have the relationship we have here, it really is special.
It's teamwork and it's friendly competition, and it's fun to watch. All right. Aaron Kubik, final words.
I just want to say, hey, thank you to the callers who called in today. We loved your questions. We are available on a daily basis. You can give us a call at 450-6000. We are at our best when we hear from you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. This has been the Tuesday Talk Show. Stay tuned for the musical stylings of Alex Bauer coming up in 1 minute or 2 right here on KAJO Grants Pass.